This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 39, for Monday, October 20th, 2008. Sketch Notes. A special programming note. Next week, we won't have a regular Thirsty Developer episode. Dave and Larry will be attending Microsoft's Professional Developer Conference in Los Angeles. But keep your iPods and your Zunes pointed at the Thirsty Developer feed. We might have some interesting content headed your way. In this week's interview, Dave and Larry sit down with their friend Mike Rohde, a designer from Milwaukee, who's got an interesting technique for taking notes during a meeting or at a conference. Let's listen in. Hi, this is Larry Clark, and we're bringing this podcast from on location at Don Harbor's in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. I'm here with Dave.
How do you pronounce that again?
Menominee Falls. It's an Indian name, Dave. Everything in Wisconsin is named after an Indian, you know, eventually, except for Madison, who was named
Frenchman.
After. Right. We're here with Mike Rohde. Mike, can you introduce yourself real quick?
Sure. I'm Mike Rohde. I'm an art director and a designer and a writer. I have a blog that I write.
And what's your blog address?
It's rohdezon.com, and I started that back in 2003. It'll be 6 years in February that I have been writing that, and basically an outlet for all the thoughts that I have related to my life. Lately, a lot more on design and those kind of things. Professionally, I'm an interactive art director at Northwood Software, so I help companies structure their sites or restructure their sites, and then work on the design and the branding and make sure that's consistent through the process.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and you've been working a lot on what we call content architecture or information architecture.
Right.
And really, that's the distinction between the graphic artist and the true designer, you know, on the web platform, right?
I think so. I mean, it's kind of fuzzy because all these graphic terms have come from print design.
Right.
And so I think the online world has struggled to figure out what do we call people. I mean, there's so many different terms that you could give to a person based on what they do and based on the firm you're in. If you're in a big firm, you could do one thing, and that's all you do all day long. And if you're in a small firm, you could do everything from the front to the back.
So, absolutely.
So I think names are kind of interesting because you never know exactly what someone does until they tell you what they do. You can get a general idea. Like if someone says they're an art director, I generally have an idea that they're managing a process from the front to the end and making sure the consistency is there. But what they, you know, an advertising art director and a graphic design art director and an interactive art director are all doing different kind of projects. So it's interesting the subtle variations even with a very similar name there.
Cool. So we actually wanted to have you on the show for a number of reasons. A, that, you know, both Dave and I know, you know, you from the community. Mm-hmm. We're both members of a local group here called Web414.
Mm-hmm.
That's a platform agnostic community group that gets together once a month and talks about cool web technology. Dave met you a couple of years ago at BarCamp Milwaukee.
That's right.
So you'd be a cool guy to have on the show regardless, you know, to just have a conversation with. But you're pretty well known for some work that you did over the last couple of years. And it really culminated at last year's South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
But let's quick tell everybody in the audience who doesn't know what South by Southwest is, the two of the people that are listening that haven't heard of it yet.
Well, South by Southwest, as I've come to understand it, is this event that happens in Austin, Texas in the spring. There are actually three events rolled into one. There's a film portion that I think is first. There's a newer portion called the Interactive, which brings web developers and designers together.
And media.
And
right?
Media in general, gaming, and it's expanded, I think, over the years. It's now including social media and a variety of other things that all seem to relate to each other. And then the third is the music portion, and it happens for 3 weeks in the springtime down in Austin, Texas. And it's a great place to go and meet people and interact with them and experience that.
It's a really cool event. Dave, you were there last year, right?
Yeah, so it was my first South by Southwest, and I have to say the place is crazy. I mean, first of all, it's like you said, it's this conference that includes so many different facets. You know, sort of the design space, the web development space.
Yep.
You know, they had like a gaming convention going there at the same time, and then the following week was the big music convention, which I guess blows mm-hmm. everything away that I partook in with the sort of the web development design portion of the conference, and essentially the town turns into South by Southwest.
Yeah,
I mean, so
kind of gets taken over.
Yeah, there's I mean, there's essentially parties going on at every different venue in downtown Austin, and there's also I remember last year there was part of the film portion of the conference, they were actually. You know, there's a film festival there, mm-hmm. and they're actually premiering new movies there. And I remember one distinctively was Calpin and boy, I'm completely drawing a blank now. Now that I brought it up, Guantanamo Bay. You know, no. Everybody's listening to this like yelling it out right now, but yeah, I mean, they had these film premieres. It was actually interesting because there were so many different parts. That were this big conference, and I was only partaking in one portion of it, but there's so much more going on.
And don't worry, folks, we won't give him the microphone again. So at least until he figures out the name of the movie. You became pretty well known after that because of a thing that you had done as part of South by Southwest right. Called Sketch Notes. And we'll get into what Sketch Notes is in a second. But it wasn't the first time you had done these. I had actually seen a couple of conferences before that where you'd done Sketch Notes. I knew that you were kind of becoming well known for Sketch Notes when I would see a reference to it in a blog and I couldn't tie it back to your blog. It was like, you know,
independently.
Right. It was,
up.
It was like, you know, normally it's like when you know somebody personally, it's like 3 degrees of separation. This was like 6 or 7 degrees of separation.
By the way, Larry, just for your information, it was Harold and Kumar escaped from Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, that film classic,
deep political, expose.
Yeah, here I was yelling political films and like flags of our fathers is what I think I threw out there. But so tell us what Sketch Notes are.
Well, I'm trying to think of a good way to say that succinctly.
We'll have a link in the show notes so people can. Best thing is if you're at your computer, not if you're driving your car, keep your eye on the road.
Yeah, but if you're check it later.
Yeah, if you're at your computer, pull up the show notes on thirstydeveloper.com, click on the link. You know, to probably your Flickr account's probably the best one, and you'll get to see some of these and be prepared to be awed.
Well, basically, what sketch notes are is a way for me to take my love for taking notes and for sketching and merge them together. It was a bit of an experiment. It was about a year ago, year and a half ago. I went to a UX experience event with Adaptive Path, and I thought, you know, it'd be really interesting if I, instead of just taking the notes that I always do, which I enjoy, what if I used a little more art with them? I like drawing fonts and typography. One of the things that I love to do is logo design. So drawing fonts and trying to capture, you know, typography treatments is always a fun thing for me to do. So I thought, what if I integrated that with note-taking and then also threw in my love for cartooning. What would happen if all those things got mixed up? And I made a decision. I said, well, there are probably going to be people there taking really detailed notes, you know, like a stenographer. And that's not
Or a live blogger.
Right.
Most conferences have a live blogger now.
It's really common for that. And I felt like, you know, that was being covered pretty well. And there wasn't a whole lot I could offer in that area because I'm not that fast of a typist. And, you know, there's already people doing it. But I thought, well, what happens if I make value judgments about what's being said? Decide what's important to me, and I really did it for myself, and try and capture those things in a graphical way that's maybe a little bit more memorable for me. I found that when I take notes of travel, that's always been a passion of mine, is when I've traveled to Germany and in Europe, to make sure I capture the day's events and then also draw sketches of the environment. So it was, I think there's been a history of me doing parts of it, and it was just an idea to bring these all together in a way that would be interesting for me and then other people who either were at the event that maybe it could spring back memories in their minds, or what I found that's amazed me are people that were never at the event at all that seem to really get a lot from the sketch notes because they're very compact. They don't take a lot of time to go through, yet they can pack a lot of information.
But they really, really tell a good story. I remember the first ones that I saw, I didn't see the UX experience one you're talking about, but the Seed conference was the first one that I had mm-hmm. seen on your blog. And you had pictures of, like, you know, Jason from 37 Signals mm-hmm. on there. And you're like, wow, yeah, that is Jason. You do a little, little picture of him. And I'd seen him on a couple of videos. So I was like, wow, that you've kind of captured Jason. But more than that, the typography, as you're talking about, really brought it alive because you would take, like, one word that was kind of a key point that mm-hmm. the speaker was trying to do and you'd, you know, do it nice 3D really bold, really detailed, you know, lettering, and it really, really brought it home.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was important for me to do, was to use the structure, the sizing of elements. That's what I do when I do any other kind of design. So it just made sense when I'm doing notes to emphasize an element by enlarging it, like the title of the conference or something that caught my eye or was very memorable for me. I wanted to capture it.
I was like, you know, if I could do this, I think I would love taking notes. Like you said, you mentioned you love taking notes. Me, not so much, right? But
yeah,
this stuff looks so cool. It's just fun to look at. And you're able to capture, like, the main points and just kind of draw them out. And what's a kind of like, you know, you have this this design in your head and you kind of just sketch it out. So, the question I have is, like, how do you draw this stuff? So, like, I'm looking at, you know, like your sketch of Jason Fried.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still able to listen to what they're saying as you're drawing this stuff out? I mean, how long does it take you to sketch some of this stuff out?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it seems like whenever these get posted, I know that on the Seed, both the Seed 1 and Seed 3 and the South by Southwest ones, there are comments usually in the first batch that say, is this guy really doing this live? Is he just taking notes and, like, going to his hotel room and drawing these? And usually I don't have to respond, because someone who has been sitting next to me or behind me says, yes, he did those live. I was sitting behind him. And I think it's just a matter of, I've taken notes for so long, and like my wife does sign language, and she always says that interpreters have to have this ability to cache the information in their head. So they're hearing the information, it's being cached, and it's being held somehow, and then they're drawing the stuff. And so that's what I think is happening, is I'm caching things and then writing them down.
Yeah, we had a signer recently at an event for a gentleman, you know, who was deaf.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there was two signers. And during the break, I asked them, I was like, do your hands get tired? Is that why there's two of you? And they told me, well, yeah, or your hands will eventually get tired. But really, it's that caching process, mm-hmm. you know, that really slows you down, right? Mm-hmm. Especially because, you know, we were at a, you know, Microsoft technology event, right? And these guys are not, you know, technologists by profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they're signers by profession. So here they are having to double think about everything, keeping up with, you know, what the speaker is saying, you know, caching that and getting that out in an intelligent, you know, fashion.
Well, one of the things that my wife taught me about signing, she does it when she's pressed to. It's not her. She doesn't feel like she's an interpreter, so it's very tough for her. But she says, you know, a lot of times with signing, you sort of make a symbol that represents a term. So you might be information architecture. Well, she may shorten that to IA, whatever that sign is. In the same kind of way, you know, you're trying to take these ideas and compress them into nuggets.
In shorthand.
Someone can say, yeah, it's a form of visual shorthand, I guess. So.
So I want to ask a question, and Dave, I'll throw it out to you also, because I think it's kind of interesting, because you talked about how you love taking notes,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of people, you know, absolutely abhor taking notes. They just, you know, flat out won't do it. There are also people who, and I find myself being guilty of this also, I will take notes, but I will never go back and look at them again, which is a really bad thing, because, you know, here you've invested the time in it. And then there are people like you that actually have a passion for it. You know, when did it start, you know, with you? When did it click?
Well, I don't know. I've gone to church since I was a kid, and one of the things that I did for a long time was take notes during sermons, because I felt like it engaged me. And then if there was something that I found interesting, I could capture it. And I think that probably helped, because for years I would take notes. And they were just text notes like anyone else would take. Of course, I would scribble and doodle on them, but, you know, for the most part, they were text. So I think that probably helped. And I just enjoyed the writing and the thinking process. I always felt like after I took notes, I understood what I experienced better than if I didn't. And so it was more of a realization that for me, it helped me to get more out of what I was doing. So if I'm going to invest the time, especially like in a Seed or a South by Southwest, if I'm going to invest all this time and money, I felt like let's try this out and see, is there a way that I can better capture this? You know, I didn't really, when I first started doing this, I didn't think about it being valuable to anyone else other than me. I thought people might find it interesting, but what I found is other people seem to resonate with these notes and it's helpful for them, and that's like gravy on the potatoes.
I like really seeing people, because South by Southwest is huge conference, multiple tracks. No way you could ever see everything,
right.
You know. Even though the sessions, a lot of them are recorded, You know, there's just no way you can invest the time to attend most of the conference. And I think a lot of people, when I saw them talking about your sketch notes, it was like, wow, I wasn't at that session, but it made it real for me.
Yeah.
You know, I got something out of it. Dave, you want to talk about your note-taking experience?
I don't even know how to answer that, Larry. My note-taking experience? I don't even know if I call it my note-taking experience. You know, just kind of like in, you know, when it's part of my job, we're always bouncing around doing different things every day. I mean, something new. You know, one day we're working on this, next day we're working on this. And the ability to take good notes would help us in our job so much. You know, looking at this technology or talking with this customer and trying to keep everything straight. However, like Larry said, it's not that I hate taking notes. I'm just not a good note taker. Never have been, you know, through school or anything. Mm-hmm. And same thing you said, Larry, is that if I do take notes, I never go back. You know, it's I don't know like if it's just I don't know if it's just the ability to process.
Do you feel like you are sort of have to kind of keep up appearances and then?
Well,
you know, like if you're not taking notes, it's thought of that.
It's
you're
not even that. I mean, I'm taking notes as I'm on the phone. Nobody else is in the room, and I'm just trying I'm trying to be a good, you know, note taker or good, you know, a good contributor to this conversation and the ongoing conversation that we're going to have by taking good notes. However, you know, it's just whatever. I don't know. It's part ADD. You get distracted and you start doing, you know, Larry, I don't want to call you out on this, but. Both Larry and I suffer from ADD. I think a lot of people in our industry do.
Yeah.
And especially being connected to the internet, having the laptop open, especially being on the phone in a conference call or something. But you try to take...
While you're recording a podcast.
Hey, I'm looking at his sketch notes. But, you know, just trying to take notes. And the form that you've captured your notes in, to me, it's just... it's pleasing to look at. I mean, it's you want to go back and kind of, you know, admire the work. Mm-hmm. Whereas me, you know, the note taking is just like atrocious. Just the bullet points and capturing, you know, not able to capture the conversation, but just it's horrible. I don't know if there's a class you can go to, but yeah, my note taking is horrible. As you said, what's the point? Because you never go back and look at it anyways.
You know, something that I thought of and I've kicked around doing was, could I do a class where I sort of teach people what I do? Obviously, I've got a lot of years of taking notes, and I'm also an artist, so I draw all the time. So obviously, I'm going to have maybe some advantages, also having sort of started this style. But, you know, I think there are some principles that you can use that would let somebody learn how to maybe take advantage of some of this stuff.
But I will say fundamentally, because I've read, you know, just about everything you've written about sketch notes, and I've also looked at comments that you've left that people have either left on the photos, the scanned images of the sketch notes, or on your blog. And what's nice is that you keep saying there's no wrong way to do this.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, there's some, you know, kind of first principles that you can do. You know, things that you could give people pointers, but fundamentally they can't really make a mistake because it's their interpretation of what they're seeing, you know. This is actually a nice segue because one of the things I wanted to talk about was, you know, and please, everybody go check out the sketch notes. You know, we'll put some links to some specific posts where you talk about creating sketch notes. You've got some great ones on the tools that you use, the things you carry around with you.
Yeah.
Like you have a little ruler and things like that. We'll point to all that. But I've been reading the book Dreaming in Code by Scott Rosenblum. Yeah, I should know the guy's name. He's one of the co-founders of Salon.com.
Okay.
And he had followed an open source project called Chandler for several years. And, you know, kind of to give people insight into the software project. And the book's out there. We'll have the link to that, too.
Okay.
But one of the things that keeps coming up, you know, throughout the book is specifications.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough specifications. You know, they don't exist. They're not detailed enough. Talk about, and I'm putting you on the spot here because we didn't talk about this ahead of time, you know, what's the, you know, how could you apply sketch notes to the requirements are long, requirements are boring, you know, kind of concept?
Well, you know, I think one of the benefits I could maybe immediately see if someone is doing or trying to apply sketch notes in their note-taking or making specs is using drawings. I think as kids, you know, if you doodled in the margins or you were drawing instead of taking notes, you know, do you ever remember being scolded by your teacher, like, stop doodling or stop daydreaming or whatever it is? But I think maybe that could be a benefit to be able to draw. You know, how we think, a lot of us, even coders, will think visually, where you could draw a diagram even of how the code would work and then have, you know, notes and arrows going to different elements that talk about what it is that you're thinking of doing. Like even an architect of a software application may be able to draw that visually in a map type format that furthers them ahead in writing in the future. And then that can be used as a reference document. So as well as the idea of giving priority as you're going through, maybe if you sort of just let yourself process while you're discussing and you start seeing these themes, that could be a way to use that if you start noticing there's themes that you captured, because you have to make decisions when you take notes in this way. Are there any themes that are happening? Are there words that are popping up a lot? Or is there something that seems like it's maybe you feel it's, you thought it was important, but you find that it's not in your notes? You know, those might be ways that could be used.
And one of the things that you didn't say that I think is just absolutely fundamental to could this work for specifications is the fact that they're a pleasure to read. Nobody wants a 2-inch thick binder with, you know, double-sided Helvetica, you know, font with nothing but text in there. I mean, when you're flipping through a spec, you naturally gravitate towards screenshots anyway, because I hate to say the cliche, the picture's worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
To me, the sketch notes, it's the picture and the words all together, you know, so that's the real value of it. I actually did a test on this recently, and I'll show it to you after we quit recording. Okay. So I don't want to get you laughing at me. Where I was, you know, working on a little side project that I was like, oh, this is something I might do, and I tried to sketch it out.
Okay.
And then, you know, pointed to some things, and you know, I don't capture as well as you do, but I thought about it. It's like, here's on 2 pages in my Moleskine notebook, and we'll talk about your Moleskine in a second. You know, how much have I actually captured? And I was like, God, I could write 10 pages of text.
It's really rich.
And not catch that, right? You know, just little nuances, like, you know, I had rounded the corners on it, you know, because that's the hot thing on the web, right?
Yeah.
And I actually pointed to it, you know, and just said rounded corners, right?
You know, so you didn't do it by accident.
Right.
Wait, so was this something Web 2.0 that you were thinking of?
Oh, of course. It's a blog badge.
So then, since it's Web 2.0, then you included, like, big buttons, big fonts, and lots of white space, right?
Well, of course, and pictures and
gradients.
Know, yeah, gradients and different colors, and
that's,
you know,
right.
And of course, cool text,
a
right?
Glossy shine.
Yeah, you can't say that this was posted on, you know, August 8th. You got to say, oh, about a month ago, right?
Yeah, that's right. Relative dates.
So, you know, I think that that's another value. Let's talk a little bit about your actual sketchbook, because you know, I've got my lame attempt at this, you know, and I want to, you know, talk about your the tools that you use.
Well, over the years, I've found a Moleskine to be, and I use the pocket Moleskine, which I guess has surprised some people. They think I'm using the large one. I'm actually using the small one.
Yeah, that's like the first thing that I failed at is I got the larger size Moleskine, and I was so shocked. And I had my Moleskine before, you know, before I saw this. You actually had a picture from South by Southwest of you holding the sketchbook, and I'm like, wow, it's the small one.
Yeah, I found in my practice as a designer too that I tend to do better when I draw smaller. For whatever reason, that scale is just right for me. And so the pocket, in some ways, reminds me that I should draw in that more compressed. It makes me be more deliberate about the space I'm using, and it fits the scale that I work well in. And so, and it's pocketable, which is really great. I can shoot it in my back pocket or wherever. I don't feel like it's a bulky encumbrance if I want to run around with it. And I found the paper on them to be really nice as well. I use the Moleskine sketchbook, which has fewer pages, but each page is quite a bit thicker.
Okay.
So it's a real heavyweight, almost a cream-colored stock, so it's really heavy. So it can handle, I tend to use gel pens, and a lot of times I'll really lay the ink on pretty heavily.
And you don't want the bleed through on the
other
side.
I don't want to bleed through on the back side. That's really critical to making use of the page. And for the most part, I've been very pleased with the Moleskines. I will say that when I did Seed 3, my Moleskine binding, for whatever reason, was faulty, and the pages were like shooting out on me. So it made for an interesting challenge to do sketch notes while signatures of the book are falling out on me.
Yeah.
And I managed to make it work. I was able to pull the pieces out and do it all. And obviously, once you scan it in, it doesn't really matter. But for the most part, the Moleskines have been really tough, and they're the right size. They've got, you know, the bookmark and the little card slot in the back for throwing people's cards in or whatever. So it's a very versatile tool.
Yeah, it's a great book, and we've actually talked about it on a previous show with Anthony Hanley. And you know, they come in all kinds of different sizes and styles. If you're more of a graph paper, need that.
I like graph paper when I do some sketching.
Right. If you like the X and Y, they've got a flavor of that. If you like more of the line notebook, if you're gonna use it more like a journal, it's there. I personally think that everybody should be carrying around, that to capture kind of ideas.
Yeah.
If you're into that at all.
Yeah, I agree.
So let me get to some criticisms of kind of the concept that I've thrown at you, that like is okay. Capturing requirements in there. And one of them is that OCR or somebody transcribing it aside, it's not really electronically searchable.
Now, it depends on how well your handwriting is. I know that the Evernote guys contacted me, and apparently I had scanned in the South by Southwest sketch notes and put them in an Evernote notebook, and they did their sort of a back-end OCR scanner. And I was surprised at how well it caught a lot of the words. Now, it wasn't perfect because I wasn't really intending it to be OCR'd, but because a lot of the words were pretty recognizable, it was able to search to a degree. So I suppose if you had the idea that it would be searchable on a scan, you could just make the letters more legible on purpose, I suppose.
Yeah, and to me, that's just not, that's not for the front-end process of somebody
right.
taking the requirements and using them. That's some back-end process that
yeah.
says, oh, can we find all the requirements that mentioned, the word, customer?
Yeah. Well, now you could say that with an image that's scanned, you can also go back and tag it. So, you could, and I've had, in some cases, I think it was Digital Web Magazine, I think one of the guys took a couple of spreads and actually transposed all the text. So, you could, one of the advantages if sketch notes are small and compact, maybe you're looking at 5 or 10 pages, it wouldn't be outrageous to either tag or basically retype all the text that's been captured, because it's, the whole idea is it's compressed and you're making decisions as on the fly on what's going to be put on the paper and what isn't. So that, maybe that's, if it's kept compact, maybe that's not so much of a disadvantage, or it could be at least worked around to some degree.
So first you kind of mentioned, if you were to put a class together about note-taking, please do that, because I'll be there. I'll
okay.
be one of the first students.
I think I'm going to do one, actually, Barcamp Milwaukee, that's coming up in 3 weeks, April 4th and 5th. I'm going to do a class on sketch notes, so I'll probably give an overview and then show some techniques. So October 4th and 5th.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
So we got a couple weeks if you want to come check that out. But
yeah, unfortunately, we got another event down in Indianapolis that we'll be at, so we won't be able to make it. But I'll be at the next one, that's for sure.
All right.
But kind of go back and talk about the pens. Actually,
okay.
First I met you at I think it was the first bar camp in Milwaukee, the first or second one, I can't remember. And you were doing
first
this,
one. That's
the
right.
first one, yeah. So you were kind of doing like a little session on, how to.
It was more like tools, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of like. How do you organize, kind of your Moleskine,
yeah.
more from a getting things done perspective,
yeah,
and
that's
stuff
right.
like that. And you actually showed me some of the pens you use. You said the gel pens. So what the gel pens that you're using, kind of like a brand, and which one are you using out there, just kind of make it easier for people to find?
Actually, I just discovered one recently. I got in hold of someone at jetpens.com, and it's a person who gets all these crazy Asian pens that you can't get anywhere else.
Okay.
And so she sent me a bunch. It was Lily Kim over there that sent me a bunch of samples, and I thought, oh, this is cool. So I just started playing around with them, and I happened on one called the Oto, and it's got a ceramic ball in it.
Okay.
It's a 0.5 millimeter pen, which is about the size I like to use. But the ceramic ball was incredible. I did the Seed 3 conference notes, sketch notes with it, and the thing I liked about it, it didn't ball up or clog up. So it was quite convenient
right.
and quite smooth. So that's my latest thing.
So is this something you can order?
Yeah, you can get it at jetpens.com. It's an Oto C305, I think, in fact.
So we should expect, the Thirsty Developers should expect a shipment from Lily,
since
we're going to be sending so much business her way.
I can connect you guys up. I'm sure she'd be happy to. You guys are pen guys, that she'd probably send you some samples. But generally speaking, the two pens that I've liked are the Pilot's G2.
Right.
0.5, and then the Uniball Signo. I think it's a Series 207.
Right.
Which is real similar.
Yeah, I picked up some of those G2 pens, as a matter of fact,
yeah.
and I do like them quite a bit.
The knock I have against them is they just take a long time to dry.
Right. So this is kind of funny, Larry. This is, Thirsty Developers, kind of a technical podcast, and we get some interesting conversations going on this show.
Pen nerds are pretty hardcore.
Well, it's interesting that I actually had a, revelation several months ago about the power of paper,
yeah.
Versus electronic, because I found myself, and I got a blog post about this, that I was, basically emailing myself on my phone little things that the speaker was saying, and I was like, God, if there was only a really convenient way of taking notes. And it's like, yeah, it was invented like 4,000 years ago by the Chinese. It's called paper, you know, and the pen, right? You know, so I kind of had this revelation recently, and I actually put a link to your sketch notes,
you know,
in the blog post, saying, you know, and if you think just, you know, my use of it's, you know, go check out Mike's stuff. So, Do you have any other questions for Mike, Dave?
Yeah, so obviously you have more than one Moleskine book.
Yes.
So how do you keep these things organized?
Well, actually, at South by Southwest, I started playing around with stickerizing them. Because South by Southwest had, you know, tons of stickers that was giving away.
It's the sticker conference.
So I would just do stickers in different patterns to kind of keep track of them. But yeah, that's a challenge. I mean, they're all black books. So
right.
I mean, I've found different ways to mark them. Some people use like ink pens that are paint pens.
Right.
And we'll number them or date them or whatever. So that's, I haven't really solved that problem. Although I think the sticker solution has worked pretty well. The one that I have with me has got a sticker I got when I was in Belize. So I always know that that's got my Belize sketches among with others.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the sticker idea is working pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, so as long, like you said, as long as you know it, if you throw some obscure sticker on there, you know what
exactly.
It is. But actually, one of the other sessions that we talked about at Bar Camp was not only sort of the note-taking and, and you know, organizing, you know, hacking, you know, your Moleskine, I think is what you called it. But you actually design also, like, logos and such, right?
Yeah.
So that's always something that's fascinated me because, I mean, I remember we're looking for a logo for Thirsty Developer. Of course, you know, Larry and I, you know, we don't have the skills to do something like that, so we tapped a friend of ours to do it. But, I mean, how does that work? I mean, because what I've seen you do is you kind of lay out a bunch of different designs that you kind of just throw on a piece of paper and they kind of go from there. Is there a certain science to, like, creating these logos or just, I mean, tell me a little bit more about that.
There's a degree of process definitely involved with it. The process that I've been able to work out for clients has been to take I have another notebook that I like using. It's called a McQuellerius. It's actually a grid notebook. I mentioned that I like grids. It's got a nice light blue grid, so when I sketch with ink on it, I can knock it out in Photoshop, and it looks like white paper. But I like this. I like the structure because I often will draw shapes, and it helps me drawing circles and squares. It just provides a base. What I usually do is I ask clients a lot of questions about what their company is, what are the goals for the company, what kind of a brand do you want this eventual logo to project, all this kind of information, a lot of business information, who are your competitors, you have certain colors you like or dislike, and then I take all that information, I process through it in a lot of ways, like sketch notes, and then in the McQuellerius, I put down little bullet points of things that I feel are important to the identity, and then I just start sketching based on those notes and any research that I might do. If it's, say, about a leaf, a certain kind of leaf, I may go to Google and find out what those leaves look like and print out samples or have it on a laptop and then just start drawing and getting some ideas down. Those are then presented to the client. They give feedback. Usually another round of sketches happens, maybe a third round of sketches. Generally it's either third round of sketches or we go to black and white artwork in the computer. So the sketching part of it is a way to kind of get these ideas on paper, and I try to do a lot of different concepts. I talk about them with the clients with rationale so they know what I'm thinking, and then together we pick something and then move to the next step. So it's a very collaborative process all the way through to the end. I'm always asking the customer what they like, what their feelings are, and working with them. So it's more of a team process.
Right. So it's almost like there's a science behind it. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, logos are very important. It's all about brand recognition. So, you know, do take into consideration, like, if this certain letter is bold or, you know, just kind of like the visual view of that particular logo, something's going to stand out about that company or what they believe in or what product they're behind or something like that. I mean,
yeah, that's all part of it. And, you know, it's a combination of being aware of what's out there to make sure you're not accidentally stepping on someone else's idea, you know, like you might do research if you're in a certain area to make sure that nobody else's logo is going to look like
the one you're
working on.
I was going to say, that's going to be hard, actually, right?
It's getting tougher because everybody's got a logo,
right.
So it's harder and harder. I mean, it makes it challenging for logo designers. So,
right.
But I think what I found that helps me is when I hone on the goals and the things that the company does and wants to do and portray, when I focus on those things, then usually something unique comes out of it.
Right.
And it's very unlikely that we'll step over something else. And sometimes the challenge is that happen are I'll come up with an idea right away, and it gets presented to the client. The client's like, that's kind of like I did a project for a guy who was a software developer, and I ended up coming up with a cursor over a cloud. The company was called Clickable Bliss. So, I mean, one of the first images I got was this cloud with a arrow cursor on it. But we thought, that's too easy. That can't be it. You know, I mean, we got to work on this. So we went, I think, through two more revisions. And by the time that we got to the end of the third revisions, we're like, hey, you know, that cloud one works pretty good. Let's go. And that's what we ended up using. So it's kind of funny how sometimes what I found, too, is often you have to work through the bad ideas to a degree to realize that they're bad ideas.
Right.
And then you come back and you start over again. And it's not like, you know, it's hard to describe to clients or other people that, why'd you do that dumb idea for? It's like, well, but if I didn't do that dumb idea, I wouldn't know it was dumb.
Right.
I can now shut off that tree or that branch and then go in a different direction and know that area is exhausted. I think I've talked to developers and they say it's somewhat similar that, you know, you go off on a bad tangent with code and you realize this code is not going to scale or at some point it's going to fall apart and you back off again and you go in a different direction.
Yeah, I was just going to say you can essentially have that same philosophy about anything, you know, you're not going to learn until you get the bad ideas out there.
And it's really important that you solve those bad ideas, because if you don't, then you could easily fall into a trap if you don't think deep enough. And then you're stuck, you know.
Yep. So, actually, I kind of want to wrap it up on this particular topic, which both of you brought this up earlier. Larry's kind of looking at me like, you know, is this the third or the last question? You know, another last question. But is both of you are involved in sort of the Milwaukee, you know, technical and just, you know, design communities. So both of you, we mentioned, you know, Barcamp Milwaukee and Web414. Could you, both of you, actually just kind of talk about what those are exactly? I know people may have heard of Barcamp, but they might not know what it is. But I've heard of Web414, but I'm not quite sure what it is myself.
In a lot of ways, they're related and somewhat similar, I think.
It's the same core group of people, but Barcamp is definitely a lot bigger than Web414.
We've sort of said in some ways that Web414 is kind of like a monthly Barcamp with fewer people. You know, Web414 is this group that grew out of a meetup about 2 years ago. We had all these people, these web developers that were meeting through meetup, and that's how we found each other. We started meeting and we're, you know, going along pretty well, and we all were sitting there one day and said, hey, wait a minute, we're all web developers. Why are we paying Meetup $20 a month to do this? We can come up with our own name and site and manage. So that's what we did, and we came up with Web414, like Pete Perdell did.
And you did the logo for
Web414.
And
I did the logo for that. And it's actually extended to some other areas. Some friends in other area codes have requested logos, so I've just generated variations on this.
I think you've got most of Wisconsin covered, and even part of Illinois now, because I know
there's a guy in Rockford.
Yep.
There's a guy in Pennsylvania, actually. My buddy in Pennsylvania wanted one. He wants to start up a group out there. So it's sort of an ad hoc. The group is not, we don't have like a president or, you know, we don't follow the Roberts Rules of Order necessarily. It's very ad hoc and of the moment. And it very much the same kind of spirit as Barcamp. We try to make all the events free. They're all free. Everybody can contribute. We look to our membership to come up and talk and share the things that they know and understand so that other people can be, you know, built up based on what it is that person knows so that we all get better. In the same way, Barcamp is very similar. It's just much larger. So it's kind of like a Barcamp every month on a small scale in a lot of ways. That's the way I think I would describe it.
Well, cool. You know, Mike, I think we're gonna wrap up here.
Cool.
Thanks for meeting us out here and showing us your favorite coffee house.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll look forward to having you on the show again sometime.
That sounds good.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 39, for Monday, August 20th.